Welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around the district and from further afield. Coming up later in the programme, you're invited to a hustings with a difference. Catherine Ross of Transition St Albans explains. But first, one of the implications of Brexit will be that the UK will be able to choose whether or not to be bound by EU pesticide restrictions. A group of pesticides whose use is currently restricted are the controversial insecticides known as neonicotinoids. Now, environmental campaigners say that these pesticides are causing or have contributed to the steep decline in bee populations. Farmers, however, say that they need them to grow staple crops like oilseed rape and sugar beet. Rotham Seedstead Research near Harpenden have recently contributed to the debate with a statement saying that the current EU restrictions on the use of neonicotinoids are not evidence-based and calling for more research. I spoke to Professor Lynn Field to find out more.
Okay. Professor Lynn Field, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to talk to me. So, just to start off with, do we agree that bees are sufficiently important that we should exercise the precautionary principle when deciding whether to allow the use of a pesticide?
It depends what you mean by a precautionary principle. I think we should always take account, when we're making decisions about pesticide use, of possible non-target effects. But in that decision, you have to weigh up how farmers will control pests if you don't allow a particular compound to be used, and what the alternative threats of that alternative chemistry might be.
So what you're saying is, say for instance, if a farmer can't use neonicotinoid pesticides, are the alternative pesticides going to be worse, for example?
Or as bad.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So there's been a lot of research apparently showing that neonicotinoids have a negative effect on bees. Just looking at some of it, there's the Global Task Force on Systemic Pesticides, European Academies Science Advisory Council. I mean, just to note, there's a whole list here. But you say that although they say that the neonicotinoids have had a negative effect on bees, you say that the evidence isn't conclusive. So why do you say that?
I don't believe it is conclusive. I think there's clearly any insecticide could kill a bee if you use it or the bee is exposed at sufficiently high level. The whole debate has really been around whether there are sublethal effects, whether an amount that doesn't kill a bee still harms the population. It reduces the number of bees or it affects the behaviour. And those kind of sublethal effects are really quite hard to detect and quite hard to do really well-controlled experiments, especially field experiments. And while some experiments have shown negative effects, others have failed to show negative effects. And there are really quite a limited number of big field trials which have really shown what happens in a field situation to a whole population rather than, you know, in lab experiments where you feed neonicotinoids to bees in sugar, where you get quite a different range. I'm not trying to argue that there are no negative effects of neonicotinoids on bees. I think there probably are some. But equally, there are lots of other things affecting bee populations out in the real world. So you have varroa mites, you have viruses, diseases, you have other things. And trying to decide which proportion of the problem is attributable to neonicotinoids is actually a really difficult thing to do.
So because of this, you have called for more research.
Yes.
But, I mean, isn't this just the kind of research that Rotham said research should be doing?
Of course we should.
Why are they not doing it?
Well, we do some of it. And in fact, it is important that places like Rotham's to do it because it should be independent and unbiased research. We shouldn't be relying on work done by people with a stake, a vested interest, whether that's a company that manufactures a pesticide or whether it's a lobby group. We as an institution should be doing exactly that, and we do some. I have a project currently on the effect of neonicotinoids on pests and bees. But we only have limited resources, and it is quite hard to fund some of these big projects that you would need to really answer some of these questions.
But given the importance of bees and the importance of the crops that we're growing, this is what we should be doing, you say?
I think we should. But there is still, you know, you still have to fund your science, and Rothamsted is multi-funder. You know, we have all sorts of stakeholders who fund research here. Largely, BBSRC provides a lot of our funding, but other people we get funding from. But it is quite hard to fund some of these really big studies. And, indeed, you know, we'd like to do more. And I agree, we should be doing more.
Indeed. So one of the things you've said also is that you think that actually if we aren't allowed to use neonicotinoid pesticides, it will be impossible for farmers to grow particular crops like oilseed rape or sugar beet.
It will certainly be very much harder.
Having said that, when farmers weren't able to use neonicotinoids in 2015, they managed to produce as good a crop, if not better, than they had the year before.
I think that's slightly misleading. They did produce a crop. If you measure the yield of a crop at harvest, it doesn't take account of what's happened during the growing. And in some crops, the cabbage stem flea beetles, which attack when plants are really young, farmers re-sowed. They went through the field again and re-sowed the crop. So they did get a crop, but they'd had all that extra input in having to re-sow areas in order to produce the crop at the end.
Right, so
again, it's a more complicated position. And lots of farmers are shying away from growing oilseed rape, because if you do have to re-sow, once the oilseed rape gets away, it's fine, but when it's attacked at a very young stage, if you have to go round and sow it again, that's got a carbon footprint, it's got an input, it's got a cost. And I think it's putting farmers off growing oilseed rape.
In which point we would then buy our oilseed rape products from elsewhere.
We'd have to buy the oil, from elsewhere. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And those places might well be using neonicotinoid pesticides
anyway.
They
might well be.
Yes, indeed. The long-term solution surely is moving away from pesticides like this. Is Rothamsted doing anything that would actually take us away from the use of these pesticides so that, the bees are safe and the crops are safe too?
I agree entirely. I think in an ideal world, we would be able to have good control of pests, weeds, diseases, with a minimal effect on the environment, biodiversity, pollinators. It's a long way off in terms of establishing the way of doing that. We do a lot of work, and from today's launch of our new strategy going forward for 5 years, we have a lot of emphasis on sustainable crop protection that allows us to maintain crops without affecting the environment. But a lot of those techniques are not at the field level yet. They're still experimental. And for the foreseeable future, part of that story, at least, will be chemistry, trying to have perhaps more targeted chemistry, better surveillance, better monitoring, so you only use chemistry when you need it, use it when you can't use an alternative. But it's part of the story, and I don't see chemistry falling out of the picture entirely in the immediate future, but I think it will move towards true integrated pest management, where you have a mixture of approaches. Mm-hmm. And maybe chemistry is there to firefight when a new disease comes along or some new threat occurs. And we don't know what those new threats are going to be. You know, there's climate change, there's movement of pests and diseases. The future is uncertain, and farmers have to have everything in their toolbox that allows them to respond to those changes.
And you would argue that neonicotinoid pesticides should remain in that toolbox
that
for the moment.
Pesticides generally need to remain in the toolbox, and I think neonicotinoids are in many ways a good group of chemistry.
Professor Linfield, thank you very much indeed.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was me speaking to Professor Linfield at Rothamsted Research yesterday, as she said, at the launch of their new strategy for the next 5 years. And if you'd like to find out a bit more about the kind of research being done at Rothamsted Research near Harpenden, then take a look at their all-new website, which they also launched yesterday. And for the sake of bees, let's hope that Rothamsted Research, or indeed someone else, produces some good research that conclude this issue and show us how to help reverse the decline of bee populations sometime soon. And remember, you can find all the information about what we're talking about today on the environment pages of the Radio Verulam website. Now, with the general election coming up, local hustings are planned. But the Better World Hustings is a hustings with a difference. I spoke to Catherine Ross of Transition St Albans to find out more. Catherine, thank you very much indeed for joining me. So who's running the Better World Hustings and you know, why?
It's being run by a partnership of 5 local community groups. So St Albans Friends of the Earth, the St Albans branch of Global Justice Now, Oxfam St Albans, Trinity URC Church and Transition St Albans. And the reason that we run it is we think it's really, really important that local residents have a chance to hear firsthand from all the local candidates their policies on the environment and on justice, and to make sure that these really important issues get some airtime.
So you say environment and justice, these are important issues. Aren't the important issues things like the national health and the economy? Aren't these slightly peripheral? Why should we care about these?
They are, all of them are important issues, and they are very linked. So if you're looking at health, for example, which matters to so many people, well, at the moment you'll have seen from the news that air pollution is a really important issue in terms of its impact on people's health and particularly on children's health. And that's an environmental issue around air pollution, equally around the food that we eat and the quality of the food. And on the economy, if you look at things like the growth of the green economy and where a job's going to come from in the future, there's real links between economic issues and environmental issues. So we don't see them as niche at all.
Yeah, these, you feel that actually these should be core things that have got big impacts right across the spectrum. OK, so will all of the candidates be there?
Yes, absolutely. We have confirmed attendance from Anne Main for the Conservatives, Daisy Cooper for the Lib Dems, Jack Easton for the Green Party and Kerry Pollard for Labour. We're waiting to hear from UKIP who their candidate, if any, will be. But if they confirm that, then they'll be asked to participate as well.
Or indeed, I suppose, any other independents or anybody like that who might turn up.
Absolutely.
Right. OK, that's good to know. So, you know, you said that all the candidates will be there. Just by the nature of what you're talking about, won't this be biased towards the Green Party candidate?
One of the things we think about really hard when we're planning the hustings is to make sure that it's run scrupulously fairly. So the candidates, they draw lots about where they sit. They draw lots about who speaks first. They take it in turns to speak. We time them and make sure they all have the same amount of airtime. The majority of questions are submitted by members of the public on the night, so none of the candidates will have seen them in advance. And also, it's just important to remember we're not talking about, in quotes, green issues. These are issues that all of the parties have policies on, and you'd expect all of the candidates to be well informed about things like energy policy, transport policy, international trade, Britain's place on the world stage.
Right. OK, then. So that sounds like quite a hard job for somebody, keeping all these strong-minded politicians in their place. Who will be chairing this?
It's a very tricky role to host a hustings. We're very lucky that we've got Benj Sykes, who chaired it two elections ago, and he did a great job then. He's the vice president of Dong Energy Wind Power, and he lives in St Albans. So he's a very experienced businessman from the renewable energy sector.
Right, but somebody who's not actually involved with any of those groups that are...
Absolutely not. He doesn't have any political affiliation of his own.
Right, so a good independent chair there. Excellent. So will members of the public, are they going to be able to ask their questions? Is it going to be open to the floor, or how will that work?
Absolutely, that's what it's all about. That's the point of the evening. So the doors open at 7:30, and between 7:30 and 8, when the hustings starts, people can submit their questions. We've then got volunteers who sort through them and group them and choose typical questions from different subjects. So Last time in the 2015 election, we had about 50 questions submitted, and I think there was time for maybe about 10 of those to be discussed on the evening from different areas. We've also got one slot that we specifically reserve for a first-time voter. So if someone's listening who knows a teenager who's 18 or 19 and this is their first time to vote, it's a great opportunity for them to come along and submit a question, and they might well get chosen. It probably is worth saying that all of the questions have to be linked in some way to environment or justice.
Yes.
So if you've got a question on a different topic, you might be better going along to the Abbey hustings on the 23rd of May.
Excellent. Well, I like that idea about the first-time voter as well. That sounds really good. Might even get something a little bit more interesting and sort of a little bit fresh coming from that as well. OK, then. So what areas do you think might be covered? Just give us a flavour for the kind of things we might hear about.
Well, I can't be sure because the questions are submitted on the night by the people that come along.
Yes.
But, for example, at the 2015 hustings, panellists were asked about their plans to clamp down on corporate taxpayers, about their commitments to tackling climate change, and about policies to help those living in poverty here and abroad. And then also looking around issues which are in the news at the moment, so they might well come up.
Yeah.
There might well be a question about air pollution, I'd have thought, because it's so much in the news at the moment.
Very much so.
Also potentially about environmental regulation in our post-Brexit world.
Yeah.
And on the justice side, it's quite likely that the party's policies on immigration and tackling racial hatred will be brought up.
You'd have thought so,
and
yeah,
quite possibly the commitment to international aid for each party.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a very interesting evening. So if we like the idea of this, where and when?
Friday the 2nd of June. Doors open at 7:30, the hustings starts at 8, and it's in Trinity URC Church on the corner of Beaconsfield Road and Victoria Street.
Brilliant. Well, I'll make sure that all the information goes on the environment pages of the Radio Verulam website. Or, in fact, it's also listed in the events on the Radio Verulam webpage as well. Catherine, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And I was there talking to Catherine Ross of Transition St Albans about the Better World Hustings. And as I said, I'll make sure that all the information goes on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. And just a few events that you might be interested about coming up. The next of the Transition St Albans Open Food Gardens is next Tuesday. Remember, that's the opportunity to go and see somebody's garden where they're growing stuff, bit of fruit and veg, get a few tips, have a bit of chat about what they're doing, very sort of informal thing. Just a chance to learn a bit about how you can make your own garden a little bit more productive. And this open food garden is Tuesday, the 16th of May, that's next Tuesday, 3 till 5 at 13 Abbey View. As I say, an opportunity to find out a little bit more. It says this is the fourth season this garden has been open for, a variety of fruit and vegetables. It's a mid-sized southwest facing garden, so if your garden's like that, might be particularly relevant to you. And there will be tomato seedlings for sale there as well, so if you haven't managed to get your own tomato seedlings going, it might be a good opportunity for you to get some. Another event you can book your tickets for now is the Oxfam Quiz Night. That's on Saturday the 3rd of June. You can enjoy a friendly evening with a competitive streak. Teams of 6 to 8 people, and all the proceeds will go to Oxfam's work in Kenya. Tickets are £12.50, which includes fish and chips or a vegetarian option. You can bring your own drinks, and you can get tickets from the Oxfam bookshop or visit oxfamstalbans.org. Make sure information about that is also on the Radio Verulam website, where you can listen at your leisure to the podcast. Always love to hear from you too. You can tweet us at rv_environment or email us at environment@rv.gmail.com. Next week, I'm being challenged to go 30 days wild. Should I be nervous? I don't know. Until the next time, thank you for listening.